Welcome back to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I have the real pleasure to talk with Darrell West, who is the author of the very recently released Billionaires, Reflections on the Upper Crust. Darrell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Heath. It's nice to be with you.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure to read the book, and I've been looking forward to talking to you about it. You've had a number of conversations about this, and it's nice to have you here in this context to talk about the book. Before we get to it, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, because you have a pretty interesting professional background.
So I taught political science for 26 years at Brown University and then moved to Brookings in 2008. So I've been here for the last 6 years and work on various aspects of American politics, mass media, and election campaign.
Be hard-pressed to find someone in American politics who hasn't read something that you've written. I know I've read a lot of your writing related to this subject, which is fundamentally about money and politics, and you come at this in a real interesting way. So let's start at the start. How many billionaires are there exactly, and how did you figure this out? How do we get to the total that you come to in the book?
There are about 1,600 billionaires around the world, and about a third of them live in the United States, so that's around 500 individuals. And for the information on the billionaires, I use the Forbes list of billionaires. They have been looking at billionaires over the past 30 years or so. So I looked at their numbers. They claim that these billionaires control about $6.4 trillion in assets, and so it struck me that given the political activism of billionaires, it was time for a book that would look at who these individuals are, how they made their money, and how they're using their money for political purposes.
You have such a nice writing style in the book. This is an analytical book. This is a book that fits into the political science tradition. But you also, you know, sort of relate your own walking through of the terrain. And you tell a humorous encounter that you had with Donald Trump. Would you recount this for us and maybe sort of explain what this expressed to you about the politics of the super rich?
I mean, one of the things I did in the book was to retell some of my personal experiences with the billionaires. Between teaching at Brown and now being at Brookings, I've had encounters with probably around 20 different billionaires. And so in addition to analyzing the role of billionaires, I try in the book to shed some personal light on them and tell some of the positive as well as negative experiences that I've had with them. And so the Trump encounter really struck me as something that revealed interesting things about billionaires and how they think about themselves. Because the story goes back a couple years ago. I was interviewed by Politico, a newspaper, about whether Trump should speak before the 2012 Republican National Convention. So I gave a tongue-in-cheek response that Republicans should send Trump on an all-expenses trip around the world, because if he actually spoke at the convention, he would bring the party nothing but trouble. So the morning that my quote appeared, I'm sitting in my office, the phone rings, and I get a call from Trump's personal assistant asking for my email address. So I give it to her, and shortly thereafter, she sends me a missive from the billionaire himself, in which he had pasted my quote about him in the body of the email. And then in big black bold letters, he had written, "Darrell, you are a fool. Best wishes, Donald J. Trump." And so that's when I discovered how really sensitive some billionaires are about things that are said about them in the press.
Yeah, I think that just this idea that this is a growing number maybe of billionaires, but it's still such a sort of a special group, and just finding out some of the sort of the ins and outs of how they live is interesting. And one of the ways that you do this is talk about some of the novel ways that billionaires and the rich can influence politics. And you have a chapter on new models of philanthropy. So briefly, how do the wealthy use philanthropic foundations to aid some of their political and policy ambitions?
Well, the old model of philanthropy would be rich people would give money to universities or hospitals and think tanks and basically let their experts figure out how to solve a problem. Like someone might be interested in education or healthcare or global poverty. They did not try and dictate the solution. But there now are new models where billionaires, foundations, and other people with a lot of money have particular interests, but they also have particular ideas on how to solve those problems. So this new model is called impact philanthropy, and oftentimes people will give money, but they'll have performance metrics where they track your progress towards stated goals. And I argue in the book that universities and think tanks need to worry about these new models because they're much more interventionist than what was true in the past. And basically, a lot of these individuals have very specific ideas on what they want to happen. So it poses new risks for universities. It creates more problems for think tanks. And so it's just something everybody needs to pay attention to.
Yeah, and just as your book was being published, there were news reports about your own institution confronting the tension that enters into the mix when outside money comes in to support ambitions. The specific case was foreign governments. Putting sort of that specific case aside, I wonder how do research institutions insulate or protect themselves from these moneyed interests, be they national in origin or individual? How are those protections put in place over the integrity of social scientific research, which is at the core mission of an organization like Brookings?
I mean, what universities do, and Brookings follows exactly the same policy, is to really emphasize the academic freedom of their scholars. Here at Brookings, scholars can basically write on whatever topics they want, and they can write whatever they want. You know, there's no review board or anybody who basically tells them what to do. Brookings does raise money, but we don't accept gifts that have strings attached to them that basically try and tell our scholars what to do. And the thing I like about Brookings is there's a wide variety of viewpoints here. I mean, even in my own government studies program, we have Republicans, independents, and Democrats. Sometimes there are wild arguments over particular things like, you know, the success of Obamacare or various types of issues that are coming before the country. So I think the healthiest thing is for universities and think tanks to be transparent about their fundraising and where they are getting their gifts, but then to give scholars the freedom to take their research wherever it goes.
And this diversity of opinion, I think, is reflected also in some of the ambitions and the political views of some of the billionaires that you study. This is not just a single self-interested, self-motivated group. There's a range of opinions, and some of this plays out in the increasingly globalized nature of billionaires. And so I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how billionaires have been involved in politics outside of the U.S. and some of the very different agendas that you see in some of the different countries.
I do try and look at billionaires outside of the United States. And I found in analyzing some of their activities that billionaires have run for office in more than a dozen different countries. And most of the time, they actually win. I mean, the most famous example is Berlusconi, who was elected prime minister of Italy and served a number of years. Most recently, Poroshenko has just been elected the new leader in Ukraine. And so it's not at all unusual in other countries for us to see this fusion of economic and political power. And when you look around the world, where billionaires have won office, invariably there are charges about insider dealing, cronyism, the billionaire using government to serve his own economic interests. And so I think that sends a lot of warning signs about what's happening in the United States, because we are seeing billionaires run for office here. Sometimes they win, like in the case of Michael Bloomberg. Sometimes they lose, in the case of Meg Whitman, when she ran for governor of California. But the example from abroad should send warning signs, because abroad we're seeing billionaires buy news outlets. We're starting to see the same thing in the United States. Rupert Murdoch owns Wall Street Journal and Fox News. Michael Bloomberg purchased Business Week. Jeff Bezos just purchased the Washington Post. So some of the warning signs of political activity that we're seeing abroad are now starting to filter back into the United States.
Is there anything that can be done about this? There's some I think perceptions of harm. It's harder to really pin down what that harm is on political systems and on policymaking. But there's a perception that there is harm. Are there steps that can be taken either in the U.S. or in countries abroad to try to set up regulatory systems so that the influence is so influence is fair, so influence is not so distorted, that the only billionaires have a voice at the table? What are your ideas about reform?
I spent the last two chapters of my book laying out a reform agenda, because I didn't want to just write a book kind of talking about the problems of billionaire political activism without trying to grapple with the ways that we can get a handle on it. So at a minimum, we need to improve the transparency of our money and politics system. We know that after Watergate, there were major disclosure rules and spending caps on elections and other reforms designed to prevent abuses in this area. But over the last 30 years, there have been major loopholes blown in these laws by various Supreme Court rulings. So we basically are now in a situation where we've gone back to a pre-Watergate era of secrecy and big money. That's a very toxic combination for democratic political systems. So I argue we should have daily disclosure. Like right now with the Federal Election Commission, there is quarterly disclosure of campaign contributions. In the internet era, there's no reason why we have to wait 3 months to find out who is funding various political campaigns. There should be online disclosure on a daily basis so that people could check what's going on. I think in the 2014 elections, we're going to have a test of some of these ideas, because in the closing weeks of this campaign, we are likely going to see a number of billionaires, both from the left and the right, dump a lot of money into those half dozen or so key Senate races trying to influence what goes on. So anything we can do to improve disclosure of their activities wouldn't make a difference, because we know from a voter standpoint, the messenger matters as much as the message. I also think that on a longer term basis, we need to think about ways to promote greater social and economic opportunity. I grew up on a farm in rural Ohio. Our family didn't have a lot of money, but through education, I was able to get a number of opportunities and ended up teaching the Ivy League and then coming to Brookings. The worry that I have today is that the poor kids in the Midwest and elsewhere around the country do not have the same opportunities that I had several decades ago. You know, it's harder to get a college education because of the high costs. There are problems in the healthcare system. So I just think we need to promote social and economic opportunities through the education system, through healthcare. And we also need to pay attention to our tax code so that there is a fairer tax code that we have.
Now after a single quote in Politico, you got a missive from Donald Trump. You've now put out a full book, and you've been pretty active in getting the word out on the book. Have you gotten any similar missives from billionaires out there? Has anyone reached out to you and either said, I've read the book and agree with what you're saying, or expressed more of the Donald Trump view of your writing? Have you gotten much feedback from the billionaire class on your perspectives?
I actually have gotten feedback from billionaires as well as a number of other individuals. And there have been different types of reactions that I've gotten. One surprising reaction, which I picked up during the course of my research as well, is there's some billionaires who feel misunderstood, which is kind of startling because, you know, they have all this money. We think they lead a great life. But, you know, a lot of billionaires are feeling under attack these days. They don't understand the controversy surrounding their role, because from their standpoint, they think, you know, we had an idea, we built a business, we created a bunch of jobs. Why don't people appreciate the great things that we have done for society? Like, they're not so attuned to some of the issues of social, economic, and political opportunity that I talk about in the book. But there are other billionaires who actually do see inequality as a problem, both from an economic as well as a political standpoint. And they appreciate that people are out there raising these types of issues. So I would say there's been a range of different reactions that I've heard since the book has come out.
What's next for you? Or what's next from the center that you direct? Is there another book project that you're starting now that this one has been brought to a close? Or is there another direction for what's going to fill your time?
I'm interested in continuing to analyze the role that billionaires are playing. Certainly, as the 2014 election comes to a conclusion, I'll be paying close attention to the Koch brothers, Michael Bloomberg, Tom Steyer, who's a climate change billionaire, and just seeing how they are using their money to try and influence the process. After the election, we're going to continue to monitor both what happens with billionaires in the United States as well as around the world. What I've discovered in looking globally is this link between wealth and politics is an issue in virtually every country, and different countries are handling it differently. You know, in Russia and China, they're cracking down on their billionaires. They're worried about the political activism. In Europe, they're concerned about what happens when wealth tries to influence the political process. So there certainly are going to be plenty of interesting cases to analyze in the future, both in the United States as well as abroad.
The book is really interesting. Again, the title of the book is Billionaires, Reflections on the Upper Crust. Daryl and his editors, I did something somewhat unusual in the printing of this book. They included, in some ways, a critical comment. You know, we always look to the jacket of the book and you get universal praise, but you put in a quote by Michael Medved that says that, you know, he disagrees with you largely, but that he really enjoyed the book. You don't see that very often, so I wanted just to commend you on doing something that that most books don't have, which is sort of a little bit of the other side. The book is published this year by Brookings Institution Press. I think it's a really interesting read. Daryl, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Heath. I enjoyed talking with you.